This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why do communists kill so many people? We'll talk about that tonight. John Kerry's going to be featured in that and others. Liz Collins going to join us talking about the Daniel Penny acquittal. Derek Chauvin needs a new attorney. Josh Hammer is going to join us talk about what the Democrats are doing to subvert Donald Trump already. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. These people are insane. Communists, that is. They're insane. And you've probably said things like this before. But before we get to John Kerry, Taylor Lorenz, let's understand the why. Because it really is amazing when you look back at the history of communism. It's not that long in the frame of things. We're dealing with 100 years, a little more, I get that. But 100 years, really, of communists establishing power in different places. So how have they killed so many people? It's bizarre. It's hard to find any other ideology, religion, however you want to describe it, that has managed to massacre that many people. And the answer is relatively simple if you're just willing to accept something that's simple, straightforward, fairly obvious, actually. You see, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, that great Russian writer and former prisoner in the Gulag system in the Soviet Union, called communists the enemies of humanity. That's one way to put it, but it doesn't necessarily explain everything. What they are at their core is anti-humans, anti-humanity. How could you, have you ever asked yourself this, when you look at something terrible they're doing, the border, let's make it about the border. How could they just let in all these murderers and rapists? Well, let me ask you, why don't you want murderers and rapists here? I realize that answer seems obvious. Well, because they're going to murder and rape people. But you see, that's where it is. You see what you just did? They're going to murder and rape people. And you have a heart for people, even people you've never met. And I'm glad you do. But the communist doesn't. It doesn't have that. Whatever that is inside of you, he doesn't possess it. It's not inside of him. He is a revolutionary fighting a revolution against the current system, against everything that is. And when you combine that revolutionary spirit with no care whatsoever for human beings, well, what can't you do to other humans? If humans don't matter, if you're not a unique, God-breathed soul who has your own characteristics, the things you're supposed to accomplish on this earth, loves, hates, friends, family members, if you're none of those things, none of the things that make you a human being, if you're just an ant, well, why couldn't I kill you? How many ants would you kill? How many ants would it take for you to kill if you were walking around just stomping on ants? How many ants would it take before you felt bad? It's kind of a ridiculous question because you'd never feel bad. They're ants. You'd never feel anything at all. That's how the communist feels about all humanity, all human beings. It's why they were called enemies of humanity. It's why I and many others have called them anti-humans. It really, at their core, comes down to that. John Kerry came out yesterday. It was in a video. And he was talking about, now I'm going to make this clear, what he's about to say in this video, the things he's proposing in this video, will not kill thousands. It would not kill millions. What John Kerry describes right here would kill billions.
There's really no polite way to put it. The climate crisis is killing people. It is knowingly, wittingly allowing people to die and infecting them with disease and providing them with air that kills people because we're not willing to take the steps necessary to do what we know we need to do. And every year now, millions of people around this planet are dying because fossil fuel and methane emissions, called greenhouse gas pollution, those methane emissions and CO2 emissions and nitrous oxide and other emissions are escaping into the atmosphere, being fed by the way in which we continue to choose to fuel our vehicles, propel our vehicles, heat our homes, light our factories, and so forth.
So, no vehicles? No more being able to move to and fro? No warmth in your home? Factories? The factories have to go? What John Kerry is describing is taking all of the advancement we've experienced in the past couple hundred years of human history, taking that life expectancy up to unprecedented levels, comfort, access to medical care, school, capital, food, all kinds of things. What John Kerry is talking about is eliminating all those things, which would undoubtedly eliminate a large portion of the population of the planet. He will sit there on camera with a straight face and discuss the steps that need to be taken to, of course, save us from climate change, but those steps would kill billions of people with a B. Billions. It would wipe out the majority of the population of the planet. Starvation, misery, death, like you can't possibly imagine. And so, how could he be like this? Because he knows that. As big of a gigantic boob as John Kerry is, he does know that. You start talking about removing fossil fuels. I hate that term. That's a commie term, but fossil fuels. Talk about eliminating factories. It doesn't take a genius to follow that line down and figure out, wow, billions of people will die. So why does he say it? Because he doesn't care. Billions of people? Would you cry over billions of ants? Along these same lines, that United Healthcare CEO, head of a health insurance company, I realize health insurance companies are never going to be on anybody's favorites list, so I got all that, but United Healthcare CEO, husband and father, executed on a street, on a sidewalk in New York City. And what I'm about to play for you is not some kind of a one-off. We have seen incident after incident, quote after quote after quote. This young lady's name is Taylor Lorenz. She talked about feeling joy when she found out this married man, father of two, was executed, and then, of course, tried to deny it.
I do believe in the sanctity of life, and I think that's why I felt, along with so many other Americans, joy, unfortunately, you know, because it
joy?
Feels like...
Serious?
I mean...
Joy in
I
a man's execution?
Maybe not joy, but certainly not, no, certainly not empathy. Because, again...
We're watching the footage. How can this make you joyful? This guy's a husband, he's a father, and he's being gunned down in the middle of Manhattan. Why does that make you joyful?
Of Americans that being murdered. So are the tens of thousands of Americans, innocent Americans, who died because greedy health insurance executives like this one push a policies of denying care to the most vulnerable people.
Should they all be killed, these healthcare executives? Would that make you even more joyful?
No, that would not.
But why not?
And,
why are you laughing?
I think it wouldn't fix the system.
You seem to find the whole thing hilarious.
She's being honest. You can hate that vile little demon all you want. She's being honest. That's how they feel. When you don't place any value in human life, when they're ants to you, well, you can kill them all. And of course they all, you heard John Kerry do it in the video. Well, of course it's always justified. Well, we have to do this. I have to kill billions. I have no choice. For that young lady, Taylor Lorenz, well, of course. I mean, I felt joy. After all, he was responsible for so much. So of course I was happy that he died. They always have an excuse. There's always a reason why they have no other choice but to be vile little monsters. And don't think this was some kind of a one-off. This has gone mainstream, the left-wing celebration of the execution of a CEO because people are unhappy with health insurance. Jimmy Kimmel, on his comedy show, talked about it.
So many women and so many men are going nuts over how good-looking this killer is. And there's a huge wave of horny washing over us right now. These are screen grabs of actual exchanges between our members of our staff and their friends, relatives, whatever. Veronica says, I need him so bad. No, like so bad, so, so bad. Okay, so I would visit him in prison and bake him cookies maybe, perhaps more, but I haven't thought that far ahead. And it's not just women. This is from the husband of one of our staffers. Did you see the assassin? Yes, I'm so upset. Like, excuse me, LOL. I'm about to be a jailhouse bride. Because damn shorty is so fine. I'm dead or willing to be. Texting all my friends in New York that I hope they get called to jury duty. God, I want to do jury duty so bad.
They can't help themselves. Anti-humans. It's who they are. Death, the death of human beings, simply means nothing to them. It's just a means to an end. Another ant to stomp on in the cause of the revolution. It's very, very sick, and it's important to remember all the wins we've had, election wins, culturally it's going our way. It's really important to remember we share a country with millions and millions and millions of sick communist freaks who think like that. They're called Democrats. Keep a lookout. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, speaking of filthy communists, you know you pay them for your cell service, right? If you have AT&T, you pay communists. If you have T-Mobile, if you have Verizon, these companies are wretched companies. And I'm not even asking for you to take my word for it. Go look up any one of those companies. Go look up your cell phone company in DEI, ESG, Black Lives Matter. Tell me what you see. You pay for that, but you don't have to. You can switch to PureTalk, cake. It's just a quick phone call. You switch to PureTalk, they'll have you hooked up with same phone number, or new phone, new number. You'll save a fortune, and PureTalk loves you. They hire Americans. That's how much they love this country. It's time to switch. Tis the season. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
He was just threatening to kill people. Mm-hmm. He was threatening to go to jail forever, go to jail for the rest of his life. And now where I'm on the ground with him, I'm on my back in a very vulnerable position. If I just would have let go, now he turns.
Why is that a vulnerable position?
Well, if I just let him go, I'm on my back. Now he can just turn around and start doing what he said to me. So
killing,
hurting. I mean, I'm not a confrontational person. I don't really extend myself. And like, this type of thing is very uncomfortable. All this attention and limelight is very uncomfortable. And I would prefer without it. I didn't want any type of attention or praise, and I still don't. Mm-hmm. The guilt I would have felt if someone did get hurt, if he did do what he was threatening to do, would never be able to live with myself. And I'll take a million court appearances and people calling me names and people hating me just to keep one of those people from getting hurt or killed.
There are still men out there. Rest assured. Joining me now, Liz Collin, journalist with Alpha News, one of the good ones out there. Liz, okay, obviously it's a great thing that Daniel Penny is a free man. It's a great thing that men like that still exist to protect women and children in this society. But Daniel Penny is hardly made whole, having been put through a public trial. I'm sure he'll need security at some point now because of the animals in the streets that are going to be after him. That's not justice. Just an acquittal is not justice.
Yeah, we heard some of that messaging yesterday, right? Calling for vigilantism in the wake of all of this, property damage, things that would be worse. But you really saw, in this case, the manipulation that was happening with different people. Their stories had changed by the time they took the stand, the medical examiner being one of them. And really so many similarities to things that we've tried to uncover and expose over here at Alpha News for years when it comes to the four officers that took the fall for George Floyd's death, Derek Chauvin, of course, in particular. But you do kind of think that perhaps this is a new day. That a lot of this can be exposed and people can accept the truth for what it is. and really see how this justice system has been weaponized against so many.
Liz, obviously you were all over that Derek Chauvin trial. I understand he's getting a new attorney. I'm pretty sure I know where this is going. But if you wouldn't mind, speak to some of those similarities you see, because I saw them too. It was laid out crystal clear how evil legitimate systems have become in this country in certain places.
Yeah, the latest developments with Derek Chauvin, we actually just had a recent conversation with him from prison. Keep in mind, he was stabbed 22 times about a year ago now by a former FBI informant who had just a couple years left in his prison sentence. But he has a new attorney now. It's a 15-page petition that so far has been filed with the court. Basically talking a lot about this medical evidence, and I think that's where the similarities happen with Daniel Penny. Keep in mind that you have no strangulation marks on George Floyd, no asphyxiation, and there's these meetings that are happening behind the scenes in the days that follow George Floyd's death with the medical examiner, that at first the word homicide doesn't even appear on George Floyd's death certificate on the actual autopsy itself. And in fact, there's some information now about a paraganglioma, a tumor that George Floyd had that can be fatal in many cases, that Dr. Baker decided at the time not to test, even though some medical experts came forward at the time and said this needs to be tested, this can lead to death. Dr. Baker brushed it off and did not do that. And these medical professionals tried to get that information, even to Judge Peter Cahill at the time, and that was ignored. These are things that Chauvin himself was not even aware of until about 2023, according to this latest filing. And we've uncovered many conversations that took place. Dr. Baker saying, well, what happens, if my findings don't line up with the public narrative? This is the kind of case that ends careers. Really talking about that pressure he was under in this case. So I think so much more of that will come out, and I think pretty soon here in Minnesota.
Liz, I realize you're not a trial attorney, so I'm asking your opinion on something, but just given what I know, lots of it from you, Derek Chauvin surely is not only going to get out of prison, someone's going to stroke that man a fairly large check, I would assume, right?
You know, the thing is, people think, Trump will be in office again. He can just be pardoned. Well, this is a pretty complex legal matter because we have a state sentence and a federal sentence that are wrapped into this. So President Trump would really only have so much power here. His new attorney seems to think that asking for a new trial is perhaps the best route here. Many people agree that Derek Chauvin did not get a fair trial in the end. This is a jury that was not sequestered. This takes place in Hennepin County, where buildings had burned and people had died in days of rioting, the worst rioting in history. So how could someone like that stand to get a fair trial? Also, George Floyd's family awarded $27 million during jury deliberations in Derek Chauvin's trial, something that I think people forget about as well. Just this immense pressure that's taking place right there.
$27 million for those dirt balls. Tell me about Minnesota now. What's happened to Minnesota?
Yeah, so that's the reason we went ahead with the documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis. I mean, it's called that for a reason. Pretty sad what has transpired here. Police department depleted, skyrocketing crime that continues. And we also have a new sequel to The Fall of Minneapolis that I hope people will watch. Something we did not want to do either, but these dots, it seems, reporters don't connect. So this is called Minnesota versus We the People. You can actually find it on Alpha News, alphanews.org, or also thefallofminneapolis.com. You can watch it for free, but it's about a 50-minute documentary. Jesse, we've had five first responders murdered, die in the line of duty in a 13-month time period in Minnesota. And of course, it is connected to the lies that took place beginning in May of 2020.
How's it connected, Liz?
Well, it's this danger, this lies, and the lawfare that, police officers, especially in Minnesota, have been the front lines and, receiving here in this state. The good guys becoming the bad guys. And, our corporate media has helped to push this dangerous narrative from the very beginning that's not backed up by fact. And ultimately, you know, people are paying the price for these politics in this state.
Liz, what kind of a blowback has there been against all this evil? We've seen places like even California, I realize it's still blue. It got redder in New York, even though it's still blue. It got redder. There's very clearly some sort of an appetite, even in blue places, to push back against all this defund the police stupid stuff. Are you seeing that in Minnesota, or is Minnesota just freaking gone?
Yeah, we saw a lot of that pushback, actually, in fact, which is included in this new documentary. There's a Minnesota State Trooper, Ryan Londrigan is his name, charged with murder yet again in a high-profile incident. But finally, you have community members showing up to the courthouse. They're wearing T-shirts in support of Ryan, members of law enforcement, retired, current. You know, he basically followed his training the night that a man was shot and killed on the highway. But yet they're trying to, you know, put him behind bars for life for following that training, basically saving his partner's life. It's a case that I hope people will watch again in Minnesota versus We the People. But you saw the people rise up in that situation, and you had murder charges against this state trooper dropped. And I think there is a connection. People, their eyes have been opened, and they are pushing back.
Good. Minnesota versus We the People. I hope people go watch that. Liz, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. I want to talk to you about waking up in the morning. You should see me when I wake up in the morning. Not that I want you to do that, but you should see me. I wake up and I feel good. Every day I wake up and I start smiling. And it's because I get a good night's sleep. And when I feel like I'm not going to, because I do the same things you do. If you're kind of, I don't know, dragging a little bit in the afternoon, you grab a cup of coffee, maybe the stresses of the day, you're worried about staying up at night. Why don't you try Dream Powder? Just try one bag of it. It's hot chocolate. Only it puts you to sleep. It's from Bean. You see, I have the cinnamon chocolate, but they have peppermint white mocha and all these other brownie batter. They have all these great flavors. It's the best cup of hot chocolate you'll ever have in your life, but it's got natural things in it, natural things. Melatonin and stuff like that. And you just sip on a cup of hot chocolate. That's what I do right before bed, and I just kind of zonk out. But when I wake up, I don't have that grogginess. Oh, my gosh. I feel good. Every single morning, I feel good. You want to feel good every morning, ready to take on the day? Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. It'll save you a pile of money. Just try one bag. You'll never look back. We'll be back.
He said to me when I left his office, when he chose me, besides what he said about being a warfighter, we can get into that, was you're going to need to be tough as You're going to need to be tough. But he paused again as I was walking away and said, but you're the man for this moment. I chose you because you're the guy that's going to put the warfighters first. We haven't had that. We need a guy that's kicked down doors and understands the consequences of war and why us deterring war, fighting it, and winning it is important. I mean, he gets it. And we can get into the policy of all of that. But ultimately, he reiterated the same thing this morning. Hey, Pete, I got your back. It's a fight. They're coming after you. Get after it.
Pete's out there doing his level best to get through. And we got to get him through. It's really, really important we do. Not sure it's going to work. I hope it is. Joining me now, my friend Josh Hammer, host of America on Trial. Josh, it's very obvious the GOP Senate, they want to be the one to pick Donald Trump's cabinet. They blasted Matt Gaetz out of the sky in about 35 seconds. They're trying for Hegseth now. As soon as they're done with him, it'll be RFK, then it'll be Tulsi, and soon Mitch McConnell will have chosen everything. That is the plan, correct?
Jesse, I think that Pete Hegseth has the votes to get confirmed. I think that Pete Hegseth is going to get confirmed, and more to the point, I think it is absolutely crucial that he get confirmed. First and foremost, because of the reason that you just said. Matt Gaetz already withdrew basically in the blink of an eye. I mean, has Donald Trump learned any of the lessons from the last time around or not? I mean, you and I both know, Jesse, that one of the biggest problems from Donald Trump's first term was that he was constantly thwarted left and right from people within his administration, from people outside his administration, from the deep state, from the shallow state, from the Congress to the activist K Street. You know what? Are you going to get in there on January 20th? Are you going to resume the Oval Office, sit down on that Resolute desk, and are you going to demonstrate that you are actually in command of your own agenda, or are you going to let these people derail your agenda before you have even started? Even more to the point, are you going to let them derail your agenda with the most slimeball gutter politics in all of politics? This is just Brett Kavanaugh 2.0, what they're trying to do to Pete Hegseth. This NBC News article from a week ago with all of these anonymous, unsourced allegations, they won't even go on the record to say that Pete Hegseth allegedly had a drinking problem, this rape allegation, which is completely implausible. The woman didn't even report it to the police until like 4 days later. Anyone who's ever worked in that field knows that an actual real rape victim basically goes immediately to the police there. So I'm not buying it. And, you know, people like Joni Ernst has already said that she's planning to support Pete Hegseth. She phrased that in a very kind of lawyerly, very clever fashion there. Maybe a Murkowski or a Collins goes wobbly there, but I think that Pete Hegseth is getting confirmed, Jesse. And it is so, so important for Donald Trump's term two imperative that he gets all of his major picks, especially, as you said, in light of the Matt Gaetz withdrawal. He's got to get the Secretary of Defense nominee there. And on the merits, just really briefly on Pete Hegseth, you know, look, he's fought in those post-9/11 wars just like you. He's a war fighter just like you are there. He's someone who's in touch with the sentiments of America's young warriors. The number one issue, from my perspective, the number one issue that America's military currently faces, double-digit recruitment shortfalls among the Army, Navy, and Air Force, all three branches for multiple years in a row. You need a young warfighter, a telegenic person who can get in there and inspire morale and patriotism of the young people. Pete Hegseth could be that guy. Heck, Jesse, you could be that guy too, but Pete Hegseth is the one who's confirmed, so I hope that he gets confirmed.
No, I think Pete Hegseth is a little bit more qualified than I am, but a little bit more of an education than I do. Okay, Josh, in your own words, take your time. Why would the Senate want to stop it, right? You see this national mandate, big election, Democrats didn't gain in a single county. Very clearly, the American people want whatever it is Donald Trump is selling. So why doesn't the Senate?
Look, the Senate is a swampy place, for lack of a better description. I mean, it's not the House. The House and the Senate are very, very different institutional bodies. The House is where you have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, where you have people formerly like Matt Gaetz, I guess he's no longer a sitting congressman, Lauren Boebert, people like that. I mean, you get bomb throwers in the House. That's just not how the U.S. Senate works. You know, even a lot of people who get to the Senate as bomb throwers, you know, as time goes on, I'm not saying that they sell out or anything there, but you start to become at least kind of optically or rhetorically more of a team player. I'm thinking here, frankly, people like Ted Cruz, who you and I are both huge fans of. You know, Ted Cruz has not sold out in any way. He's still a rock rib conservative, but even now you see him there, and he's willing to kind of sponsor some interesting bipartisan legislation there. He's becoming more of a bipartisan statesman, which is not necessarily a bad thing there, but there's something about the Senate. I think it's a smaller body there. You're there for longer terms. You spend more time there on the floor, kind of chumming it up there. It just operates in a fundamentally different way. And senators take their nomination, advice, and consent power, I think, very, very seriously. And to be clear, they should do that for good reason, because it's one of the most formidable powers that the Constitution vests in U.S. senators when it comes to judicial nominees, when it comes to cabinet picks there, when it comes to treaties. I mean, these are the things that senators have that congressmen in the House do not necessarily have there. So they're not wrong for taking that power seriously, but they also have to read the political tea leaves here. And that's the point that you're making, and this is the important point, is that Donald Trump actually, in basically all these states that I'm aware of, he actually ran ahead of the swing state Republican senators there. Basically, Donald Trump's coattails, you know, that's the reason that we're going to have a Senator McCormick from Pennsylvania or a Senator Moreno from Ohio, places like that. You know, they're not even in the Senate yet, so I'm not calling those guys out or anything like that. But the point is, that Donald Trump really was the one who won this election, and he won it largely for the Republican Party, not the other way around there. Again, from my perspective, that entitles him to a massive presumption that he should be afforded the cabinet picks that he wants in office come January 20th there. If there's someone if he's like murdered his wife or something, God forbid, I mean, if there's something like truly five alarm fire like that in the background, then sure. I mean, at that point, you know, let's go ahead and do a deep dive and vote that nominee down there. But at this particular point, you know, Pete Hegseth, I mean, give me a break.
Josh, why is the bipartisanship in the Senate? Why is it always one way? It really is maddening when you look at it. You look at Lloyd Austin, I think it was 90 votes. I think that's right. But it's just viewed as being a very bipartisan thing. And you and I both know that if Pete gets through, and I hope you're correct about that, that every single swinging Democrat is going to vote against him. But we can't go on like this where we have to be bipartisan and they never do. You can't hold together a country in this way.
No, you definitely can't. You know, look, I mean, I go back to the Ketanji Brown Jackson Supreme Court nomination in 2022. I mean, when is the last time that you've had like more than maybe one, like a Joe Manchin, like a Democrat senator vote for a Republican Supreme Court nominee? I couldn't even tell you. But Ketanji Brown Jackson there, I mean, you know, there's always these institutionalist Republicans that are out there saying, oh, the president is accorded the responsibility, or he has the ability to choose for the Supreme Court who he wants to there. You know, once upon a time, Republicans actually did show some spine in this regard, Jesse. It was actually during the 2016 presidential campaign. That was when Antonin Scalia passed away in his sleep in February 2016. Obama nominates Merrick Garland. And Mitch McConnell and Chuck Grassley, from their Senate Majority Leader and Senate Judiciary Chairman perch, actually do a tremendous public service by fighting to keep that seat open. So Republicans can actually play hardball on these nominees when they want to. It's just a question of when they want to. The problem, Jesse, as you and I both know, at kind of a broader, more fundamental level, is that too many people on the right do not view this as a war. People on the left view this as a life or death proposition. The political arena, the Senate, the Supreme Court, the cabinet, they live for this. Now, look, we on the right, you know, we have our houses of worship. We have other things that we live for. We have our families. They're not really the party of families. They're not really having children, frankly, for the most part there. But I mean, we have other things to live for, but we still have to care. And we still have to do all we can to not do this stupid kumbaya, John Lennon imagined shtick. I mean, what world do we think we live in there? I mean, the year is 2024. This is not 1984 and 1976 anymore. There's a fundamentally different Democratic Party. They're trying to pat the Supreme Court. They're trying to add Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. estates. They're fundamentally trying to tear down everything that this country was founded on and predicated upon, and we have a duty to stop it.
Josh, what are they going to do to sabotage Trump?
Well, look, I think the Pete Hegseth operation is actually part of it. I mean, I think what you're seeing now is frankly just a preview of what could possibly come, which again kind of gets just to the broader imperative of what you and I were just discussing, which is that you have to nip this thing in the bud right now. You got to fix this during the transition period. You cannot let this become a sign of what could come in the first few months, God forbid the first year or two of the Trump administration there. You can't let these people, once they smell blood, they're just going to keep on coming. They're going to keep on coming there. I mean, look at what some of the major blue state Democratic governors are saying. Gavin Newsom is presiding over a special legislative session out in California to so-called Trump-proof the state of California. J.B. Pritzker in Illinois and Phil Murphy in New Jersey saying very similar things there. Pritzker in Illinois, if memory serves, basically said, you want to come to my people, you got to come right through me. I mean, that sounds very threatening there. Look, they're going to try all they can to create large-scale so-called sanctuary jurisdictions where they're not going to allow their state law enforcement, their local law enforcement to assist with ICE and various other immigration related federal bodies in order to deport criminal aliens and things like that there. You know, fortunately, there's actually a very simple thing that the Trump administration and the Republican Congress can do in response to that if they actually want to there, which is that you can basically just defund each and every one of these states unless they go along with your plans to deport criminal aliens. That's perfectly constitutional. There's actually a late 1980s U.S. Supreme Court case called South Dakota versus Dole that basically stands for the proposition that Congress can indeed defund the states when the policy goal is related to what the strings attached are to the policy. So you absolutely can defund California, for instance, when it comes to immigration. administration if they will not help ICE deport all these criminal aliens there. So there's a lot of things that Trump and the Congress can do in order to fight back there. But I have no doubt that you're going to start seeing some brand new love for federalism, which is a federalism love of convenience, you might say. These people don't love federalism very much, frankly. You know, when Barack Obama or Joe Biden are president, it's only when Donald Trump's in charge, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm a big federalism fan myself. Josh, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. All right. Let's talk about saving a life really quick before we move on. Babies matter, and they can't speak for themselves, and they can't fight for themselves. And if a mother wants to kill her baby in her womb in this country, it's very easy for her to do it. So how do we fight back against that? When it's a phone call, a quick teleconference, and then a pill that comes in the mail, how do you fight back against that? Ultrasound. It is our greatest tool. Because when that young lady gets a free ultrasound from preborn, once she hears that heartbeat, she will choose life. She does almost every single time. Did you know that? Almost every time? They sit down, heartbeat, the baby becomes a baby for her. So provide her with that ultrasound. Christmas season, good time to save a life. You know, babies are fairly important. Preborn.com/Jesse. Remember, this is tax deductible. Preborn.com/Jesse. $28 buys the ultrasound. You can give them as much as you want. They're out there saving 200 lives every day. We'll be back.
What happens January 21st? Where do you start?
Well, there's three rails we'll start the first day. Number one, we're going to secure the border. Number two, we're going to run the deportation operation. And number three, I'll look for these 300,000 kids. We'll find them too. President Trump's been clear. We're going to prioritize public safety threats and national security threats first because they pose the most danger to this nation. So day one, we're going to be looking for these public safety threats, arresting them, detaining them, and deporting them. And if these sanctuary city mayors don't want to help, then get the hell out of the way because we're coming. We're doing it.
You say that the left media has it backwards. Brandon, you as the bad guy. How are you the bad guy?
You know, I grew up in a family full of cops. My grandfather's a cop. My dad was a cop. And we're in a situation now where the left thinks those who enforce laws are the bad guys. Those who broke the law are the victims. Well, we're going to change that after January 20th.
Wild how much common sense is getting back in style. Joining me now, John Phillips, host of the wonderful John Phillips Show. John, doesn't it feel like maybe we reached peak commie in this country and that things are breaking our way right now, more than just Trump? Just don't you feel it everywhere, or am I crazy?
I think you're right. I mean, look what just happened in New York City last week, where the Dems tried to flip the script on both of those two incidents that generated so much national attention, where Penny was supposed to be the villain, the vigilante who wanted to just go out and kill people at will. Of course, we know that's not true. The opposite is true. He was a good Samaritan who tried to help and save people who were trapped on a subway cart with a crazy person who was threatening them with physical violence and death. And the jury got it right. Even in deep blue New York City, the same people that elected Alvin Bragg to be the district attorney, they got it right. You go on social media, you see many people like Taylor Lorenz who are sanctifying the shooter, the alleged shooter of the healthcare executive. Well, guess what? Someone at a McDonald's dropped a dime, he was arrested, and that guy is going to be going to prison for a long time. It's almost as if there is this wave of sanity that's just coming back to the country ever since the election took place. And it's like, okay, we're recalibrating now. We're left is really left, right is really right, up is really up, and down is really down, and you're not crazy.
New York Times, of all publications, has an article out today alleging the Kamala Harris campaign had some racial discrimination problems, and it is wild to see the knives that are out for Dome post-election loss. What's going on here?
Oh, yes. Well, this is something we've known for quite some time, which is any tool that they use against Republicans, at some point they use on themselves, because if that's what you know, that's what you know. And if you don't like the result or you don't get your way, and a weapon that has been successful for you in the past at moving things in your direction is calling people racist, and you work for Kamala Harris and you didn't get what you thought you deserved, or you didn't get the outcome in the election that you had hoped for, well, then why not just call them racist? Why not just throw those charges that you would throw at a Republican without hesitation against your own boss? And now Kamala is getting a little bit of a taste of her own medicine. I mean, don't forget, she's the one that did this to Joe Biden back in the 2020 Democratic primary when they were on stage and she went after him on busing and practically called the man David Duke. Well, guess what? It's your turn in the barrel, lady.
John, obviously, as you and I have spoken about many times before, this is an extremely nakedly ambitious woman, pardon the pun there. She's not going to take a loss for president and just go back to the sidelines and raise her non-kids. She's going to figure out some other way to try to rise to something. Is that another run at the presidency? Is she going to make a run at the governor? Is she going to win governor?
Well, it's been done before. I mean, go back and look at different vice presidents or vice presidential candidates. When they're out of the limelight, they typically find some office that they think is winnable and they run. But what's funny is they find ways to lose in places they have no business losing in. I mean, you think about what happened in the 1960 presidential election when Dick Nixon lost because the Democrats cheated and stuffed ballots in Illinois and Chicago. He came back to California, which was then a red state, ran for governor, and lost. That's what gave us the "you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore" speech. We saw it with Walter Mondale. Walter Mondale ran for the U.S. Senate in Minnesota after Paul Wellstone, his airplane crashed, and the Democrats needed a candidate at the last minute. And guess what happened? He lost to a Republican. That was the last time a Republican won a U.S. Senate seat in Minnesota. Geraldine Ferraro ran for the U.S. Senate twice in New York, never made it out of the primary. Sarah Palin ran for a House seat in Alaska. She managed to lose in a state that Republicans reliably win. If Kamala Harris comes back to California and runs for governor, that could really be the final chapter in her political biography. She could lose here, and I would love to see that happen.
Do you get the sense, because look, this is me on the outside looking in, I'm not part of the Democrat Party, but I wouldn't be shocked, John, I wouldn't be shocked if she went down in a primary. I feel like there's a lot of Democrat anger towards Kamala Harris. You know, losing, obviously, is the big one, even though they won't admit it, blowing $1.5 billion, being handed the nomination. She's hardly the belle of the ball with the Democrat base. Could you see her just flat out losing a primary?
Yeah, I could. And you're going to have a lot of candidates in that race, including candidates with a lot of money. And she's going to need Democratic donors to kick in. And I remember reading one report saying that Democratic donors would only help her retire her campaign debt if she agreed not to run next time. So that kind of gives you an idea as to where they are on her future prospects. Well, if you're not independently wealthy and the people who typically fund Democratic campaigns won't fund you, then how do you beat a billionaire candidate, which we're going to have in that race, Eleni Konilakis, the lieutenant governor? How do you beat someone like that? And the answer is it gets a lot harder, and Kamala is no shoo-in.
Wow. That may have been the last we see of Dome. John, thank you, my brother. As always, you're the best. All right. It's time for some light in the mood. It is the Christmas season, after all. You ready for some Christmas spirit? Hang on. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And before we get to this, I want to remind you that you can subscribe to my YouTube channel if you like. It looks free. If you like funny little shorts and little goofy things we do, go subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC, or just take your little phone and scan that little thing there. Subscribe to it. That stuff will pop up and you can enjoy yourself. Now, on to lighten the mood. It is the Christmas season, and I'll be honest, I've been a little delayed this year. Normally about the 1st of December, I'm in there. But I'm starting to get in the Christmas spirit pretty heavy When I see cars like this, it makes me want to do it to mine. See you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.